Hey, good afternoon, Juno, on a rainy afternoon. It's Pat Moore. I'm your host today for Juno Afternoon. It's just 3 o'clock right now at KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. My guest list this afternoon includes Katie Bowsler from the University of Alaska Southeast. She's going to be bringing us up to date on the evening and evening presentations. They started last Friday, and they'll be every Friday for a while now. So we'll be hearing about all of the fine offerings there. Skip Wallen is in town. He and Kathy Reddy will be here. They'll give us an update on the Whale Project. We'll get a little preview of tonight's concert by the Boston Brass and the Enso Quartet, and we'll get the details about Saturday afternoon's I Am Juno Dance Fest. We'll have that, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and more all on today's Juno Afternoon. National Native News is next.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Nez Perce leaders are among those headed to tribal court today for charges of public nuisance infractions. More than 24 people were arrested and charged after a protest last month. They temporarily stopped a shipment of equipment traveling through the tribe's reservation in Idaho to Canadian tar sands. Brooklyn Baptiste is a member of the tribe's executive committee and natural resource subcommittee chair. Baptiste was among those arrested and charged during the August protest.
We just felt as a council that we opposed them coming through. We didn't appreciate them, the state of Idaho, giving a permit to these guys without consulting with the tribe. We deemed it illegal. And so our people were going out to protest, and we were going to be right there in front of them, you know, being the first ones as council, knowing that if charges were a little bit more severe, if we got charged something, we knew that we may lose our positions. But we as leaders felt that we got to be there, and we have to show exactly the leadership, not just elected or behind a desk or, you know, legislative, but actually be on the ground as leaders with our people.
Baptiste says he's likely to pay a fine. The tribe wants an environmental review and consultation of the huge loads traveling Highway 12. The tribe believes the loads are a threat to natural resources and historic and cultural sites, including the old Nez Perce Trail and its fishery, which includes a large salmon restoration project. The tribe and an environmental group filed an injunction against the U.S. Forest Service to halt the mega loads. A judge ruled in their favor last week. The court order directs the Forest Service to consult with the tribe.
It impacts not only current value systems, but cultural intrinsic values that are hard to quantify. Those are the things that we want them to take a look at. And that's not going to be a 30-day period. It's not going to be when you do an evaluation. A cultural sensitive properties review takes a long time. And that's what we felt they needed to do in the first place. Now at least it puts consultation in the lap of the Nez Perce tribe.
The U.S. Forest Service did not provide comment by deadline. The National Congress of American Indians supports President Obama's nomination of a Native woman to serve as a federal judge. On Thursday, Diane Humitiwa was one of 8 people nominated by the president for U.S. District Courts. The Hopi woman is a nominee for the District of Arizona. According to the White House, she currently serves as special advisor to the president and special counsel in the Office of General Counsel at Arizona State University. She's a former U.S. attorney for Arizona and also has worked in tribal and state courts. According to NCAI, if confirmed, she'd be the first American Indian woman in history to serve as a federal judge. Android users now have a way to brush up on the Navajo language, KUNM's Carrie Young reports.
The app comes loaded with all of the traditional Navajo characters and 65 pre-made phrases to help beginners through any basic conversation. It can also act as a user's primary keyboard. Jerome Sosi is the president of Native Innovations, the company that developed the application. He says he created the app to give those wanting to learn the language more ways to practice communicating.
I mean, our younger generation these days, they're all digital. Everybody has some kind of device. So it gives an opportunity for our younger generation and anybody out there who's wanting to learn to start talking to Navajo and posting things in Navajo on social media.
The Navajo keyboard has been available to iPhone users since February, but because there are more Android users on the Navajo Nation, Sosi says the Android release was in high demand. The Android app has been downloaded more than 1,000 times since being released earlier this month. For National Native News, I'm Carrie Young.
During this week in 2011, the New York State Senate Select Committee on State Native American Relations held its inaugural meeting in Albany. The meeting addressed economic development and challenges and included the Oneida, Seneca, and St. Regis Mohawk tribes. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, and by the law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 5 and a half minutes after 3 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, your host today for Juneau Afternoon. Taking a look at the weather, you already can. Just look out the window, it's rain, and it looks like it's going to rain through Wednesday. So temperatures about like they are now, 50s in the day, and the lows about 49, 46, something like that. So not much temperature swing. Rain for a while here, and then maybe we'll get back to that Indian summer stuff we were having before. Hey, my first guest is always welcome on this show. She's amazing because basically all I have to do is just turn the show over to her, and she takes over and does it all, and I can take the afternoon off.
Oh,
hi,
really?
Katie Bowsley.
Okay. Hi, Pat. How's it going?
Hey, it's going
good.
Yeah,
I'll just do my little monologue here. Yeah.
You're here to talk about the Evening at Egan Lecture Series, but I'm going to start you off by asking you a question about the Evening at Egan Lecture Series.
Okay.
How long has this evil thing been going on?
That's a really good question.
Yeah.
I know that Scott Foster started it, and I've been on the job now for going on 6 years. Before that, Kevin Meyer was around for 7 years, so... Wow.
I'm saying 13, if you add 6 and 7.
I think we're going on 15 years.
Wow.
And, you know, that's a very good question that I should get the answer to.
Yeah, yeah.
I should probably consult Scott myself. Scott, if you're listening,
yeah.
Call
I also
on in.
Wonder how many people know that there's more than one way to do the Evening at Egan Lecture. If you can't get loose on Friday nights, you can check these things out at the university library. They're all recorded, and you can walk in there, and they're on DVD.
Most of them.
But you can go back a few years if you're curious about some topic that was back a while.
Sure.
If something comes back up in the news like that, then you can go in there and grab the tapes. And then they also, I think, air on 360 North.
They do. 360 North is really our greatest resource right now for seeing old Evening at Egan's. We also have a YouTube channel. If you go to our revised website and you just kind of click on...
Now in the 12,000th revision, yes. You guys change your website about every week.
Actually, no. This is the first time it's really happened since my tenure.
Huh.
So it's pretty exciting. But if you go to the homepage and then click on Juneau and then click on the Evening at Egan link there, you'll see on the left-hand column a YouTube link, and that is the UAS YouTube channel where you can see a lot of old Evening at Egan's.
But nothing beats being there.
That's true.
Yeah.
So
we get a chance to be there tonight.
Tonight we have a pretty interesting one. Albert Kukesh, who is the chair of the board for Sea Alaska Corporation and our former state senator, of course, longtime esteemed state senator, he is giving a talk called the Alaska Native Claim Settlement Act and Sea Alaska Lands Legislation. So now, you know, there's a lot of things are in Alaska are celebrating their 40th anniversary. And the passage of ANCSA by Congress is no exception. That happened 40 years ago. And from Senator Kukesh's perspective, you know, Alaska Natives are still waiting for that final legislation that he'd like to see on land entitlement. So his presentation is going to be on what he sees as roadblocks still faced by Native corporations when it comes to land rights. And a biggie here is, of course, the proposed Sea Alaska Lands legislation.
So this is a chance to really hear it from someone who has been right in the middle of the fight ever since the beginning of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of historical perspective there from Senator Kukesh. So we're really appreciate him doing this talk. It's at 7 o'clock tonight. It's free to the public, and it'll be at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall, which, for those of you who are unfamiliar, it's on the campus in the Egan Library Building, bottom floor. And if you can't see it in person, we should be live streaming it. And if you go to UA Cable, Channel 11, or just go online, you should be able to see this live. So, yeah. we're looking forward to that tonight. Pat, I'm just back in town, but we have a pretty full schedule here, and usually I come in at least once.
Are you going a little longer with it this year? It seemed to me, I'm not sure that it has gone as far as long as you're going this year.
No, it's always gone roughly from mid-September through mid-November.
Oh, okay.
And this is no exception. You know, our dates are pretty exact there, September 13th to November 15th. Always Friday night, always 7 o'clock at either the lecture hall or the library. Most of our events are being held in the lecture hall, and you want to just give you a little rundown of what's happening?
Yeah.
Well, next Friday, I'm really looking forward to this one. In January 2013, we have a really cool thing happening with the capstone courses in recent years, and that is students travel abroad along with faculty and do a special course. So Outdoor Studies did a capstone in January of this year in Ecuador, where they climbed and they skied some really high altitude peaks, a couple of volcanoes. And this was historic in that Juneau Outdoor Studies students had never done anything like this. So this was quite a trip. And members of this group will share images, some video footage from the expedition. They'll talk about the trip and they'll reflect on the experience. So that's next Friday, the 27th, in the Egan Lecture Hall at 7.
Outdoor Studies is really an interesting major for the University of Alaska Southeast to offer. First of all, it's a wonderful place to do it because right here you have incredible opportunities to learn an area that is unlike almost any other in the world.
Yep.
And then we graduate people who then go on to become guides, to become leaders in the industry and like that.
Mm-hmm.
So this is it's a small program, but it's really has some incredible.
Well, it's
draw.
Also quite rigorous. You know, now you can actually get a 4-year degree with emphasis in outdoor studies. And so it's really interdisciplinary as far as literature and the different arts and sciences disciplines, along with some pretty intense outdoor excursions.
So here's a chance next Friday to see some of the students that have gone clear through the program and really had a wonderful adventure as the capstone.
Correct. Yeah, we'll have some alumni there, recent graduates. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, the 4th of October, we'll be partnering with the World Affairs Council. They'll be showing a film called Not My Life about human trafficking, which is a really very serious topic. This is filmed on 5 continents in a dozen countries, and this is on the really cruel dehumanizing practice of modern slavery and global human trafficking. So that will be followed by a panel discussion with Robert Brownen, who is the Alaska Institute for Justice representative, a Juneau FBI agent, Matt Judy, and he's a member of the Governor's Task Force on Human Trafficking. So that's kind of a combination film and panel discussion, a little different on the 4th. Then on the 11th, another topic that just really is captivating to me anyway. This is with our faculty, Heidi Pearson, who's an assistant professor of marine biology, but guess what she's talking about? The history of anatomy, medicine, and art along the Italian peninsula. And this will be a presentation on the history of anatomy, medical education, and art in the medieval and Renaissance eras in Italy. Plus, she'll have, of course, a travel log. So I'm kind of an Italophile, so I'm pretty excited about that one. And then the 18th, again, partnering with the Juneau World Affairs Council. This is part of the 3-day, actually, annual conference held out at the University for the World Affairs Council. The symposium this year is on Alaska-Canada relations, and the topic is the sinking of the Princess Sophia, a Canadian-American disaster. This is with the co-author Bill Morrison of the book The Sinking of the Princess Sophia, Taking the North Down with Her. So, of course, huge tragedy that this is a Canadian ship that sunk near Juneau in 1918. Everybody died, all 354. And so this is a presentation on the stories of the ship's Canadian and American passengers and how they interconnected in the two territories and what this kind of did for our settled history, this very tragic incident. On the 25th of October, another interesting one with and different. This will be held in the Egan Library. This is with our professor of political science, assistant professor of political science, Glenn Wright. And this is on people in forests using behavioral experiments to reduce global deforestation. So Glenn Wright is actually going to have tables set up in the library and have people participate. So this is a good participatory evening at Egan in a kind of natural resource a natural resource simulation that shows how games can be used to help us better understand governance in ourselves in the area of natural resources. So that should be another kind of, you know, wow, who knew?
I think there's a tremendous potential here. One of the things that, having been the father of a teenage son who got into mm-hmm. gaming really hard, mm. I was really surprised to find that my son was playing some kind of Space Wars game or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I started asking him what the rules were and like that, and I discovered that he was actually taking a kind of a mini course in economics. Mm. I didn't understand that, but in order to win this thing, you had to understand.
Okay, so there's some good to it.
And so the potential of a game to teach someone something painlessly is really marvelous. So
yeah.
I'm looking forward to that particular
That's
presentation.
That's very interesting.
Yeah.
Getting
yeah.
so involved in the game that you're learning a ton at the same
yeah,
time.
Yeah, you
wow.
don't even know you're learning it, but all of a sudden yeah. I was asking my son these questions and he was feeding back to me the mm-hmm. basic principles of economics. But
okay.
all in terms of uh-huh. having to get credits to buy a larger ship in order to be able to carry more goods to, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And it was wild to
yeah.
find out that he was doing that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that one is happening on the 25th of October. Folks, for those of you just tuning in, we are giving a sort of rundown for the evening at Egan at the University of Alaska Southeast this fall. This is Katie Bosler. And I'm on November, so we got three in November. The first, we have a very interesting presentation with Sanjay Piare, who is our associate professor of geography and the Alaska EPSCoR team. EPSCoR is Experimental Program to Simulate Competitive Research. They're giving a presentation called Juno's Burners Bay, a Living Lab for Studying Environmental Change and Social Adaptation. So this will look at how will livelihoods, management practices, and communities change and adapt to the types of dramatic environmental changes forecast for the next 50 years or so. So mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. A lot going on at the university. And you know, what's really nice is that this series allows us to showcase that. Another interesting thing that this is, I think, our third or fourth year running now. You know, we have a new, relatively new program called the One Campus, One Book Project. And we invite a guest author and author of a book that is distributed to many classes at UAS and to the UAS community. And you can also, of course, get the book at the bookstore, check it out at the library, from the public. And this is At the Mouth of the River of Bees, Human-Animal Communication After the Change. So that's with Kish Johnson, who is the author. If you want to learn more about that, you can go to our website and look at the schedule. And then finally, another really interesting one you'll hear more about coming up to it, I think, 15th of November will be Deconstructing Racism, Power and Privilege in Our Community. This will be a panel discussion facilitated by Huni Lance Twitchell, our Alaska Native Languages program head, and this will be kind of a tough conversation, but something we feel is very important, and we want to have a forum for it at the university on the 15th of November.
Katie, what a great series. So tonight
yes.
is this talk by Albert Kukesh concerning ANCSA, and an outstanding opportunity available in the Egan Lecture Hall starting at
7 o'clock, Egan Lecture Hall. Thank you, Pat.
Thank you.
This is Bird Note.
It's my itch, the Bible,
in classrooms around the country, teachers who love birds and nature are introducing students to a source of lifelong enjoyment. Here's kindergarten teacher Emily Zerwanka.
So they choose a bird that is most like them, and then they go through different steps in learning about that bird. So it's about a three-month project that we do, and they get to present their knowledge as ornithologists to their school community and the community at large.
Rocco knows why he made his choice.
I'm studying the great horned owl,
Because it can tear up its food and eat the meat. And I like meat.
We asked Molly what someone should know about her bird, the pileated woodpecker.
They eat like ants and spiders. They have a chiseled beak and climbing feet. And their babies have little tufts of hair that are just kind of orange.
Cedar holds his life-size replica of a snowy owl. Why the snowy owl?
Because I like the colors black and white. And I like that it has hooked feet. It eats rodents and fish and sometimes bunnies. Wild bunnies.
Like the song says, plant the seed in fertile ground and watch it grow. Today's show brought to you by the Bobolink Foundation.
It's 21 minutes after 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News. I have a great honor as my next guest is the guy who is going to put a whale on our front porch here. Skip Whalen has been working on this project, I think, for a long time, and we are finally, I guess, to the point where we're almost ready to pour some bronze. Kathy Redding's
right
here with him, and Skip, welcome back to Juneau, and
Thank you. Glad to
see you here, and glad to see that you're finally almost to the point. You were out actually measuring the walk today?
Measuring the fountain.
The fountain, yeah.
Measuring the fountain in Bridge Park, which is that five-acre, beautiful, now empty area that's been designated for the whale fountain and sculpture. It was the place where the city had the gravel, little gravel warehouse, but now everything is empty, and the Marine Exchange Building will be on the highest part of the ground, with the Marine Exchange on the top, Docks and Harbors on the second, and then Retail Museum on the ground floor. And then the whale itself will be in a infinity pool, and it will rise 26 feet from the level of the pool. So it's quite exciting to be in the home stretch after having been working on this for 6 or 7 years now, for me.
Skip, on the website, there's a really detailed description of the finished sculpture with the water features and the other parts of it. My question to you is, when this started, you were actually first going to do something with bubble feeding.
Yes.
And then it morphed into the breaching whale.
Indeed.
Once you had gotten to there, how much of what is going to be your outcome did you have in your eye? In other words, how much of it grew as the project, and how much of it did you know at the beginning?
At the beginning, I was thinking bubble net feeding. And once we got into the breaching whale, all of my research on bubble net feeding kind of fell by the wayside in favor of this new concept. The breaching whale is going to be visible from a greater distance. I think, although I love the earlier idea, I think the breaching whale is also going to be more dynamic and exciting, more uplifting. And of course, this is a marvelous phenomenon that we here in Southeast Alaska get to experience firsthand. So, in a sense, it embodies a certain spirit of Alaska.
I've had some conversations with Ray Troll, who does a lot of comic stuff, but he's also pretty good at painting fish.
Oh yes.
And Ray was talking to me once about how he came to understand that he was going to have to really look at a fish in order to be able to just get something to happen on the page, mm-hmm. or in his case, sometimes on T-shirts, that was going to be right. Did you have that same experience? Did you know, did your knowledge of whales, how did it grow as you were putting this together?
I had some knowledge of whales, but not as much as I thought I had. For example, the flippers. If you look at the flipper of a humpback whale, the leading edge of it is a series of knobs. And I thought, well, those were just knobs, protrusions. They're not. They indicate the underlying skeleton, the remaining fingers of the hand of the whale. Mm-hmm. And each of those knobs relates either to the distal end of the radius and ulna or to the joints between the digits in the fingers. So they're very specific. The last series of them out toward the end of the flipper, six knobs, six finger parts. So there were things like that, and like the distribution of barnacles and tubercles and pleats, that all had to be looked at with a closer eye.
Authors talk about the fact that there's a point sometimes when you're writing a story where your character turns around and begins talking to you and tells you that he shouldn't be doing what you were thinking you were going to have him do. Have you had any experiences like that with the whale as you've come to the design?
So far, the whale has not begun has not begun blowing steam in my face. But perhaps that's coming.
Okay. I guess the other thing is, to what extent did you have to consult with scientists in order to come to your understanding of things like the fingers in the fins?
Yes, indeed. Not only local whale watchers and whale researchers from Juneau and from Sitka, but also to some folks on the national scene that contributed early ideas. For example, when I was working on the bubble net feeding, that opening of the mouth in order to take in seawater, that's a very complicated operation. The bones change positions, they separate at the symphyses. There, a lot goes on in order to accommodate bubble net feeding. But that all went by the wayside once we started on the breaching whale.
Yeah. Now, at this point in the project, this ain't cheap, right? So, Kathy, there's still some fundraising going on.
That's correct. This is a monument to the 50th anniversary of statehood. And this will be the only actual monument to statehood in the entire state. You know, this is a statewide event. All of the other celebrations were costume balls and like a fire on the park strip and all. You know, this is going to be the only tangible memorial of the 50th anniversary of statehood, just like the Windfall Fisherman Bear was of the 25th anniversary of statehood. We were thrilled to receive the $250,000 grant from Rasmussen, which was a huge boost and is permitting us to send Skip to the foundry for the casting phase within the next month. And we have about $350,000 to go.
Skip, can you describe the next step in the process for us?
Yes. Creating a bronze sculpture involves, first of all, sculpting an original. Following that, molds have to be made. And the molds go through a series of stages before bronze can be poured into those molds. We're at the stage where the molds are finished, and we're actually ready to begin pouring bronze. And in the case of this sculpture, we're going to require, I think it's an estimated 605 individual molds and 605 individual casts in bronze, all of which have to be assembled like a three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle, and all of the seams have to be made to disappear so that it becomes a monolith of bronze.
A lot of people are very familiar with your bear. And my question is this like an order of magnitude more difficult?
Yes. Because of its size. Not necessarily because of the difficulty in sculpting it. The bear, with all of the texture, and is in some ways a more challenging work to accomplish. But the size and the scope and the complexity of fitting it up with a pool and with fountain works, I'll make it a little more daunting project.
Finally, Kathy, I know that right now you're seeking funds to finish the project, and you need quite a handsome sum to finish everything out. If someone is moved to donate, how do they go about it?
All right. The first thing is alaskawhaleproject.org is our new website. And you can, at the $10,000 level, you are in bronze. On the bronze plaques. There are also, straight contributions, and we're getting in $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 contributions every week now, so we're getting up the home stretch is there. When you have a contribution like $250,000 from Rasmussen, it just really wakes everybody up, you know. We also are selling bricks for the plaza around the fountain, around the whale, and those are in perpetuity. Many people are honoring a loved one. Find more and more people want their loved one's name in the brick for the plaza. The bricks go from 4 inches by eight inches, which is $100, up to $1,800, which is a pretty enormous a brick for the plaza. So we're just eager to have people participate. We'll be having another fundraiser, one of Lorraine Durr's fabulous dinners coming up. It's not set yet. The date's not set yet. And we'll also be auctioning off a beautiful silk whale, 8 feet by 4 feet, that Candy Barons and Laurie Stenberg made out of silk. So we have lots of other fundraising things coming up.
Skip, thank you so much. What an honor to have you on the show, and I wish you good luck with the casting. I know it's always a tricky process, and it's going to be hard work for you. So,
thank you.
Yeah, and Kathy, thank you so much for telling us how we can participate.
Thank you so much for inviting us on the show.
Yeah, what better way to close this out than to hear from the whales themselves, huh?
The Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 20th of September, 2013. It was on this day, 1848, the American Association for the Advancement of Science was created. It was founded by mainly geologists and naturalists who wanted to expand their group to include all of the sciences. In Europe at the time, scientists were doing important theoretical work, big breakthroughs, chemistry, physics, electromagnetism. Alexander von Humboldt was famous for his work trying to bring together all the fields of science. There were theoretical scientists working in America too, Joseph Henry working on electromagnetism, the geologist Louis Agassiz, Benjamin Pierce, mathematician, astronomer. But in general, while the Europeans were focusing on more theoretical pursuits, Americans were engaged in the practical side, in technology. Samuel Morse had developed the telegraph. Robert McCormick, the McCormick Reaper, which could cut grain much more efficiently than a farmer with a scythe. Charles Goodyear had invented vulcanized rubber, which finally made rubber stable. And Americans were more focused on geology and on botany. But the American Association for the Advancement of Science thrived. More than 2,000 people joined during its first 12 years, and it's still going strong today. Publishes the journal Science, has come out since 1880. It's the birthday of the poet Donald Hall, born New Haven, 1928. His most recent books, Unpacking the Boxes, A Memoir of a Life in Poetry, and a new collection, The Back Chamber. Donald Hall, who said, "I see no reason to spend your life writing poems unless your goal is to write great poems." At 16, the poet reads Whitman and Homer and wants to be immortal. Alas, at 24, the same poet wants to be in the New Yorker. It's the birthday of Upton Sinclair, born Baltimore, 1878. He investigated working conditions in the meatpacking industry and wrote the novel The Jungle. It came out in 1906. He used the proceeds from the novel to open a socialist colony in New Jersey. It burned down in a fire. Upton Sinclair went on to write almost 100 books. Upton Sinclair, who said, "It is difficult to get a man to understand something when his salary depends upon his not understanding it." And it's the birthday of the poet and novelist Stevie Smith, born in Hull in Yorkshire, England, 1902, lived in the same house from the time she was 3 until she died in 1971. Known for writing light verse about dark subjects, including the poem, "Nobody heard him, the dead man, but still he lay moaning. I was much further out than you thought, and not waving, but drowning." Here's a poem for today, a poem by Donald Hall, entitled "A Grace." God, I know nothing. My sense is all nonsense, and fear of you begins intelligence. Does it end there? For sexual love, for food, for books and birch trees, I claim gratitude. But when I grieve over the unripe dead, my grief festers, corrupted into dread, and I know nothing. Give us our daily bread. A Grace by Donald Hall, from his Old and New Poems, published by Tickner and Fields, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, offering poetry podcasts to listen to and thousands of poems to read at poetryfoundation.org, and by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Produced by Joy Biles, assistance by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Support for this program comes from Balloons by Night Moods, now offering custom-made candy bouquets and candy cakes for birthdays and special occasions. More information at 523-1099.
It's 23 minutes before 4 o'clock, and you're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore hosting today for Juneau Afternoon. My next two guests are here to play music, but they're not going to play it here. We have Jeff Connor and John Marcus, members of the Boston Brass and the Enzo Quartet, and they are putting on a program tonight at Juneau Douglas High School, which has an interesting thematic background to it. It's Romeo and Juliet about how many ways?
We have a very exciting concert.
Well, first,
Pat, thank you so much for having us in. It's a pleasure to be back in Juneau. We were here a number of years ago, and I've been looking forward to this, bringing the Enzo here with us. It's going to be an exciting concert. The concert is all music based on Romeo and Juliet, I mean, the famous Shakespeare story. And we have some pretty amazing music and some great arrangements that we've designed specifically for the program.
Now, somebody has said that there are basically 7 stories. This, of course, is the story of 2 star-crossed lovers who, for one reason or another, can't get together, but do anyway, and then the end, of course, the tragic ending. So I guess the question is, how do you deal with that in a piece of music?
How do you capture all the pieces of the story? Well, we're trying to, I mean, in terms of the concept of the program came about about 4 years ago when we were in Singapore at in residence at the Yang So To Conservatory, and they have a string quartet in residence there. Yes, Boston Brass in residence there, and we're friends with the string quartet in residence there, the Tang Quartet, and we have been deciding kind of figure out what can we do to collaborate. You know, what would be a fun program to do on our next visit, and we came up with the story of Romeo and Juliet. I mean, there's so many other big stories like that, but Romeo and Juliet came to mind, and just kind of thinking of all the music that composers had written for that story. And it just kind of whittled down what would go well with strings, and then we added, you know, with percussion and piano, and we came up with the Prokofiev the ballet mm-hmm. suite, kind of taking, there's three suites, and we kind of took the, you know, collaborated or took three of them, you know, or took the, from the three suites, designed our own suite, and then the symphonic dances from West Side Story mm-hmm. of Leonard Bernstein. And then we did the program over there, and it was so much fun, so successful, that we said we have to do this in the States. And so for the past couple seasons, we've been teaming up with the Enzo Quartet, and it's just been a great relationship. And it's just, this is our, this is our fourth or fifth time doing the program.
I think, yeah, something like that, third or fourth, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, and the music's great. We had the arrangements done for us, and they just work famously for, you know, you think, well, you have a brass quintet and you have a string quartet. You know, how does that quite work? Well, it does. The arrangements are brilliantly done. The strings are mic'd. And so we've kind of figured all that stuff out. And besides those are kind of the centerpieces of the program. And then we also do the Boston Brass. We play a little suite of Dmitri Kabalevsky from his ballet, Romeo and Juliet. Hmm. And then the Enzo Quartet, they do some of the Juliet letters. We're going to read some of them, and they're going to play a couple of the instrumental things that Elvis Costello did with the Brodsky Quartet. So
without voice, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So just be some of the string quartet parts.
Mm-hmm. And then we're going to read some of the poems as well.
Yeah. So audiences that have seen this, everyone knows the play, mm-hmm. but the pieces that you've mentioned are probably not something that everybody's just intimately familiar with. How does the audience react? Are they comfortable with this thematic presentation kind of thing?
They are. They seem to just love it. I mean, everywhere we have played it, we've played it kind of all over the United States, and every place we go, audiences have just really enjoyed it. Huh. I mean, it's so varied, you know, with the Prokofiev, very, very romantic, classical, and then you have the Bernstein, which is very jazzed influence. It's pretty cool, and there's a lot of soft spots, a lot of tender moments, and then there's just a lot of bravura, you know, a lot of loud spots.
Yeah, I think the pieces themselves, they do speak for themselves, you know. They Romeo and Juliet obviously is the theme, but certainly between the masterpieces for Prokofiev and West Side Story, they really do entirely, they just speak to audiences that just, I mean, they're undeniably fun and wonderful to listen to. So with the idea of Romeo and Juliet in the background of your head, I could add another level as well.
I guess the other question that I have for you is this. A string quartet is like almost like a family.
Yeah.
And when I've watched string quartets play, your eye contact is always amazing because everyone is working to having done a lot of rehearsals together, but still there's this communication that's going on between the members of the quartet.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the same with the brass. I haven't seen as many brass choirs.
Mm-hmm.
But my question is, when you put this together, is there any... How did that work mechanically? I understand the arrangement is key to the whole thing, but how did it work mechanically to have four people who play intimately together all the time, then the brass group that plays intimately together all the time, and then you say, okay, so now we're going to join these two groups. How does that marriage?
Well, I think it goes, everybody on stage is a great chamber musician. So we're used to that. It doesn't matter if we're just, you know, the quintet alone or the string quartet alone. We're all
chamber musicians.
Yes, so we know how to put it together. And we were talking about this morning for the clinic. You know, usually when you have a large ensemble, you have your conductor. But, you know, there's no conductor, so we are relying. You do see that, a lot of eye contact across from the brass quintet and the string quartet. You're going to see us, you know, a lot of communication between one another.
Huh.
So there is that, and we're just used to that, you know, so it's kind of almost second nature. It doesn't matter if it's strings, woodwinds, more brass, percussion, you know, we're just... You know, where everyone is just really dialed into one another.
Yeah, I know watching, that's one of the most exciting things about watching live chamber is right. You know, this incredible web of communication that's going on up there. You can mm-hmm. you can almost feel the lines connecting.
Yeah. And and just, you know, from the Boston Brass side, it could not be easier working with the Enzos. I mean, they're just it's just so easy. And, you know, in terms of following and just, you know, great musicians. I mean, what do you hear? Just what they're able to do with taking these big, huge string sections and just, you know, basically having four for people doing it. It's pretty amazing.
Well, thank you, Jeff. That's really nice. We feel similarly too, playing with it's daunting playing with a brass band, but I have to say, we've completely changed our feelings of it.
At least they gave you a microphone.
Yeah, that's true. That's right.
Yeah. Let's hear just a little bit, shall we?
Yeah, sure.
So what are we hearing?
Which movement is this? This is the famous one.
Yeah, bum, 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 bum.
Well, we'll hear it tonight. And the concert starts at 8 o'clock. It's at JDHS. I think there may still be some tickets available. I'm not absolutely certain of that, but anyway.
I think there are. We hope a lot of people come out. It's really a great concert, and we just hope everyone comes and sees it, and I think they will really enjoy the experience.
We have a wonderful time playing it, I have to say. All of us do.
An absolutely fascinating combination of brass and strings tonight at JEHS at 8 o'clock. The Boston Brass and the Enso Quartet, Romeo and Juliet.
capulets, the jets and the sharks, the horns and the violins. The only performance in Alaska of an innovative and provocative string and brass collaboration, Boston Brass and Enzo String Quartet, will be performing Notes from the Balcony, Romeo and Juliet in Music, 8 p.m. Friday, September 20th at the Juno Douglas High School Auditorium. Tickets at jahc.org, Hearthside Books, and The Jack. Sponsored by KATH. Major support from the National Endowment for the Arts. This message is brought to you by the Juno Arts and Humanities Council.
Once again, in October, it's time for the training that's offered nowadays through the Juno North Star Borough of City and Borough of Juno. This is called the Community Emergency Response Team training. You can register for any or all of the sessions. The first one is on Tuesday, October 1st. It's from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m., and all of these sessions occur out at the Hagavig Regional Fire Training Center. The first session is on basically a familiarity with potential disasters for the local community, family emergency preparedness, and the how-to information on hazard mitigation. And then on Tuesday, October 8th, the second week of the program, is a two-hour session on basic fire suppression techniques. Sessions 3 and 4 on Saturday, October 12th, the combined session is a three-hour session on disaster medical operations. October 15th, sessions 5 and 6, again combined, this is a two-hour session on light search and rescue operations, safety concerns, techniques, evacuation, and so forth. And then on Tuesday, October 22nd, is a two-hour session on terrorism. And then on November 2nd, there's a course review and a simulated disaster exercise. And then on November 6th, there'll be a graduation ceremony. There's no charge for these classes. And basically, at the end of it, you are trained, if you take all of the sessions, to be a member of a community emergency response team capable of assisting the first responders in the event of a major disaster in Juneau. So consider taking the course October 1st through November 6th, every Tuesday evening during that period of time, out at Hagavig Fire Training Center. By the way, a quick reminder, Prairie Home Companion this weekend, there's going to be 30 KTOO fans in the audience at the Fitzgerald Theater for the live broadcast and taping as part of KTOO's 40th anniversary celebration, and we'll broadcast it twice, on Saturday from 4 to 6 here on KTOO, and Sunday from 11 to 1 on KRNN.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
EWE is the easy way to say Iwetnarvik Within East, a club that celebrates the more than 200 students at Anchorage's East High School who are of Alaska Native and American Indian descent. Every couple of years, the club hosts a fashion show during Alaska Native Heritage Month.
These are from the southwestern coast of Tunumit.
Students filled the Iztai Auditorium to watch the 25 or so club members take turns modeling traditional regalia on stage and telling stories about each featured clothing item. David Clark is a senior at East, and he's the president of the EWE Native Leadership Council.
You know how people are sometimes, you know, segregated by race, you know, here that's obviously not true. We're all one group of people, and that's just it. That's just how it is. It felt really uplifting for everybody to come together and represent each other's culture, even though, you know, it's not their own.
Angela Hartvigson is the Indian Education Counselor at East and is also the EWE Club Advisor.
We are the most diverse school in Alaska, and to celebrate that and the diversity and all of the unique backgrounds, heritage, and culture, and be a part of that with East High is also an incredible feeling.
The students hosting this fashion show spent more than a month planning the event. They borrowed clothing from family members and Native organizations, learned about the history of the items shown, and performed a traditional dance that closed the show. I'm Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Alaska State Division of Behavioral Health.
It's just about 5 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. Pat Moore, hosting today for Juneau Afternoon. Got a little update on the weather forecast, and guess what? Tuesday, partly cloudy. starting late Monday night, we're supposed to kind of clear off a little bit and quit this rain thing for a little bit. And then Tuesday, partly cloudy, and then Tuesday night, mostly cloudy. And then, of course, on Wednesday, it's going to start raining again. But, hey, Tuesday sounds like it might actually work for us here a little bit. My final guest today is no other than the famous or infamous Vinnie Latta. You got another dance thing coming up, right?
We do. This is our fourth annual Dance Fest, and I'm excited to put this one together for the community. So this is Saturday.
Yeah.
This Saturday, 1 o'clock at the Jack from 1 to 3. We've got 6 great groups ready to perform. And, you know, with the weather being the way it is, most people want to be indoors anyway. So you guys come on out, get your coffee and come sit and watch a great set of performances.
Who all's on?
Well, we have Polynesian dancer Nini Tortu. We also have some Iranian dancers, and I don't know the group's name yet, and I believe they're just volunteers from the community who want to get together and, show their culture to people.
Wow. Okay.
So we've got Alaska Native dancer dance group, Yisku'u, and they're amazing.
They were in last year.
I don't know if you've seen them before, but they do several dances from different tribes from here in the Southeast.
Huh.
They do a Tlingit dance and Haida dance and... and Athabascan dance as well. So it's pretty interesting.
Uh-huh.
We've got the Highland Scottish dance groups, and they're an amazing group to watch with the kids.
Yeah. And then, is Daughters of the New Moon in this year?
They're not in this year, unfortunately.
Oh, okay.
The group, being that the fall season here in Juneau is usually when people like to take their vacations, the group is kind of a little dismantled right now,
okay.
Everyone being out and about.
So is there the opportunity for the audience to dance as well? Is that
always, yeah. we'll have the DJ going, and the DJ will play music, and the audience is always welcome to just stand and dance in place, and if they feel the spirit, throw their hands in the air and do their thing, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people come out last year?
Last year we had a great turnout. I think we had over 100 people for sure.
Uh-huh.
So it's an amazing thing to see. If you've not caught one of our dance fests, over the last several years, this is probably my final dance fest that I'm putting together. So if you haven't caught one in the past, be there or be square no more. Yeah.
But probably the event will go on.
I hope so, yeah. Unfortunately, we didn't receive funding this year from the city. So we've done, a lot of our advertisement efforts through social media, put out a Facebook event, and we've got a few posters around town. The Jack was paid for by the city clerk's office. So without funds, there's not a lot we can do as far as doing community education and things like that. But that's why I want you guys to vote for Bill Peters. Not just kidding.
Hey, that's now
that's
we have
a different story.
Time here.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. So, again, the time is?
The time is 1 o'clock from 1 to 3 at the Jack, Saturday afternoon. And the weather indoors is going to be at a nice, great room temperature, about 65 to 70. So, it'll be nice and cozy. Get your coffee, get your tea, bring the kids. It's a free family. It's a very fun event.
There you go. Juneau Dance Fest. Vinnie Latta, thank you so much
thank
for coming
you.
Down.
Thanks for having me.
Music to go out with by Hot Club of Cowtown concert coming up. This is KTOO Juneau in Juneau, Alaska. We broadcast on translators. K276 AF is in the Mendenhall Valley in Auk Bay. K269 AO is in Lemon and Schweitzer Creek. K201 AM is in Gustavus. K220 BT is in Hoonah. K210 AS is in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. And we have support for national programming from Corporation for Public Broadcasting and, of course, from listeners like you. Monday on KTOO FM on Juneau Afternoon, Joan Pardis will be your host. We'll get an update on 360 North Productions in highlighting the 50th anniversary of the Alaska Marine Highway. Steve Kosas will be here with the details about Tuesday's planetarium presentation on astronaut humor. We'll talk with Mara New about her year-long residency at Moscow's Bolshoi Ballet Academy, and we'll learn about the new Tlingit language app. Stay tuned for All Things Considered.